Blog Talk Radio.
Prosperity. I'm Cynthia Johnson, and I'm here with Dr. Reggie Johnson, and we're your hosts this morning, along with Gloria Wells, who moderates our chat room, and we're in the book study of Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. Good morning, Dr. Reggie. I'm just talking. I didn't even have my... Good morning, Dr. Reggie. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
I need to introduce everybody because I had my mic off.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm Cynthia. I'm your host this morning, and I'm here with Dr. Reggie. And, of course, Gloria Wells is in our chat room, moderating our chat room. And we're in the book study of Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. We're learning how to move from pursuing our external power to pursuing our authentic power. And today our lesson is going to be on courage. Dr. Reggie, can you take us into our morning prayer?
Mm-hmm. As we breathe the breath of life, Father, we thank you for another day, uncharted territory, a brand new sky, opportunities to learn, to love, and to grow in love and light and peace. Give us religious tolerance. Give us political tolerance. Give us cultural tolerance of everyone on earth, because every single person is a genius, yet unborn. Every single person is a master of religion, of science, of math, of politics, of everything. Let us love people for who they are, not necessarily what they are and what they choose to be. Our hearts have to be open and receptive. Our minds have to be receptive to love. You work in mysterious ways. I thank you for the energy and the dynamic, unseen power of the Holy Spirit working in everybody's life. Thank you for healing everyone on the line who listens, giving them prosperity, divine, true prosperity, in body and mind and in strength. Let them listen and hear with new ears this morning. Heal everyone who listens, and let them know who you are in each person. Work in their bodies and give them power of love. I thank you, God, that our attention is on you and not on the world. We thank you and praise you this morning in the energy of the Christ consciousness. We wear mantles of love. Thank you for giving Cynthia a facilitating power by the Holy Spirit. I see the change, and I welcome the change, and I thank you for the change. I thank you for people's lives are being changed every day with this book study and the power that the pages no longer become pages of ink and paper. They become living words in our hearts and our minds. Father, thank you so much for this wonderful blessing that's bestowed on everybody at the hour that is sacred at 7 a.m. We believe it is so, and so it is.
And so it is, and so it is. So today we're talking about courage. And I just want to say one thing right now, because I have a visitor in the chat room and I want to acknowledge him, that we will pray for you and we will pray for Jen. I know that you're pursuing a great book, you're manifesting a great book,
and your commitment to that gift that is being channeled through you is 100%. And sometimes people can't see that, but you just need to hold on and have faith. Just hold on and have faith. And everything will work out for the highest good of all. Every challenge that you're experiencing right now is a lesson for you to grow, to continue to grow. And I hope that this lesson on courage will bless you today. So stay with us and hear it all the way through, because I'm sure you're here for a reason. Okay, so we're talking about courage. And he says it's about stretching myself beyond the limited perspectives of the frightened parts of my personality. What am I afraid of? What the frightened parts of my personality, and how that can confine you and bind you and put you in bondage. Let's start with just the first little narrative part, and then we'll move into a discussion. Multisensory individuals use courage in a way that five-sensory individuals do not consider. When I was in the Army, for example, courage meant to me, among other things, parachuting with equipment at night. And every parachute jump would require a main parachute, which was strapped to the back of the jumper, and then a small reserve chute strapped to the front. Equipment jumps require, in addition, a heavy equipment bag, which is attached below the reserve chute. And after the main chute deploys, the jumper releases the bag, and it falls to the end of the long elastic cord where it hangs, allowing it to hit the ground first, a safe distance away from the jumper. When the jumper is on the ground, he follows the cord to the bag and retrieves the content. And last comes this rifle strapped to the side of the jumper, muzzle up. This was the most worrisome part of each jump for me, because a good parachute landing fall requires a kind of tumbling roll, which I never learned how to do with a rifle strapped to me like a torso length split. Since all of this happens in the dark, the unnaturalness of jumping out of an airplane, trying to do it well, hoping the canopy deploys, hoping that if it doesn't, the reserve chute deploys, remembering to release the equipment bag, the deafening noise of the aircraft and sudden quietness of falling through the air, and trying to reach the drop zone, hoping the wind does not pick up, seeing the ground rush toward me out of darkness, fearing a landing on rocks or being dragged or both, and trying to do a parachute landing fall in a splint, combined to make the experience totally terrifying for me. Yet I did it again and again. Even before that, after quitting college and traveling to Europe, I sat on a street bench in Stockholm with my guitar, summoning my courage to sing in public for money. I determined to stay there until I stood up and played, no matter how long it took. I sat there for several hours before I was finally able. I was very frightened, but I did it anyway. Partly because I was hungry, and partly because I would not let my fear prevent me from doing what I wanted to do. So here, these are examples of the old type of courage. The courage to do what is necessary in order to feel accepted or valuable or safe. you know, children, and even some adults, they taunt one another to demonstrate that old courage. Are you a baby? That's been enough to launch countless foolish acts, such as jumping off of a cliff into a river without knowing the depth of the water, or playing chicken with oncoming cars. So I used that old courage to lead top secret missions in Laos and to run rapids on the Colorado River in a kayak, instead of in the oar boats that most of our party used. Doing these things made me feel special. I didn't see at the time that they covered my pain and powerlessness. Spiritual growth requires the courage to use your will to heal your own fears, instead of trying to change everyone else. This is not the recklessness of a daredevil who breaks 30 bones and survives, as a friend did in a climbing accident, or even parachuting with combat equipment, as I did. It is the courage to keep the commitment to yourself to experience and heal all of the frightened parts of your personality instead of indulge them or run from them. I want you to take a deep breath here. Take a deep breath, because I want you to breathe on this thought about courage. What is the purpose of courage in terms of your spiritual growth? What Gary Zukav is telling us is that it is for us to have the courage to look within. To look within and to really see what we are afraid of, and then to stand and face it. Whether or not the frightened parts of your personality heals, it depends upon your intention. Here's an example. You're climbing a mountain, and that requires courage. But if your reason for climbing it is recognition or self-validation, the climb itself is an act of fear. Here's another lesson for us, isn't it? Talking about intention. The climb does not challenge your pain or powerlessness, but it actually reinforces it. He says, I have a friend who is proud of his dramatic rags-to-riches story, a truly remarkable journey from poverty to super wealth, but the fuel for his ascent into material wealth was the need to prove himself that he has value. Wealth was the need to prove himself that he has value, that he has his place in the world, and that his worth is knowing and being with, that he is worth it. So creating authentic power requires stretching yourself instead of remaining in the fortress of familiar fears. Suppose you have something that you know you need to say, and you don't say it because you are intimidated or you feel unworthy to speak. That is a way of keeping yourself separate from the intimacy that is possible when you share. Even when you are having an emotional reaction, such as anger or fear or jealousy or the need to please or the need to withdraw, speaking with the intention of reducing the distance that you feel from an individual instead of making him wrong, that requires courage. Withdrawing. Creating an internal distance between you, silently judging and remaining in a power struggle, that does not require courage. On the other hand, if you usually speak frequently or continually and you feel the urge to speak yet again, speaking does not require courage. In this case, the irresistible urge to intrude your perception, to impose yourself, to explain yourself, or to set the record straight masks the pain of powerlessness. So challenging that urge by not speaking and instead experiencing the sensations in your body, which are uncomfortable, that requires courage. The dynamic is the same in each instance. Why? Because challenging what you compulsively feel you must do in the moment, whether it is to speak or to remain silent, it brings to the surface of your awareness uncomfortable sensations in your body that lie beneath the need. And these are direct experiences of the frightened parts of your personality. Doing what you have always done to mask these sensations, to make yourself feel comfortable again, does not require courage. In fact, that is spiritual cowardice. And then he gives this example, a personal example of his relationship with Linda. He says, when I met Linda, I was grieving the dissolution of my engagement. And this is what really blew me away. He says that my former fiancé and I had separated 5 years earlier, but I still clung to the future that we had envisioned. It took 5 years before he had a breakthrough. He was separated from this woman for 5 years. At the same time, my relationship with Linda was like none I had experienced, not sexual or romantic, but very engaging and very meaningful. And even when I did not enjoy being with her, it still was beautiful. And so I decided to explore the possibility of reconnecting with my fiancé one last time before I opened to the new experiences I was having with Linda. So I called my ex-fiancé. She was not interested. And that evening during a candlelight dinner in my cabin, Linda asked me if I had called my ex-fiancé to ask about getting together again. No one except my ex-fiancé knew about that call. So I was very surprised, and suddenly, in a circumstance I had not experienced before, because if I had lied to Linda, I would have destroyed the very thing that made our relationship special. If I told her the truth, I risked losing it. And so here's Linda. She waited so patiently for my answer. And at last I told her about my call and what my fiancé and I discussed. And then I shared the pain I had felt for 5 long years and my aching for the dreams we had shared. And I held my breath and I waited for Linda to stand and to leave the table and leave my life. But she remained. She remained sitting, still looking at me. And at last she said, "You know what? I am so glad you told me this, because now I can love her too." Wow. He said, all of a sudden he was just in a whole new realm, a whole new reality, because I had told the truth, and the worst had happened. although I was prepared for it. Excuse me, the worst hadn't happened, although I had prepared for it. And the best had happened instead because Linda remained. And I felt a deeper relief than I could have imagined. Not only did Linda stay in my life, but our relationship deepened and became stronger because I had challenged my fear. I challenged it for health, for wholeness, for love. I could have chosen to attempt to manipulate Linda. But that was no longer acceptable to me. I just love this. I just love this. And her answer, now I can love her too. She wasn't threatened by this other woman in his life. He says, when I answered Linda truthfully, I opened a door to experiences that I did not know existed. I felt at home in the universe. I felt at ease. I was in awe of the miracle of life, and I was grateful for it. In the past, I had used my courage in the service of gaining admiration and success and recognition. Oh, a green beret. Oh, sex. But this time, I used it in the service of my integrity. I wanted to build my relationship with Linda. If I was going to have one, it had to have a foundation of trust, not on a sand of a falsehood. I feared losing my relationship with her, but sacrificing my integrity to keep it was not an option. Because the relationship that I wanted required integrity. This is a perfect example of the new kind of courage. The new courage enables spiritual growth. The old courage prevents it. The new courage creates authentic power. The old courage pursues external power. The old courage assuages the pain of powerlessness. The new courage eliminates it. The old courage leads to pride, but the new courage leads to fulfillment. Courage is required when will and fear intersect. Where there is no fear, there is no courage. There's only will. These are the experiences of the loving parts of your personality. They do not require courage in order to be caring or contented or grateful or appreciative or to love life. They are fearless travelers through the earth school, always expressing the energy of the soul, continually creating with the intentions of the soul. They are fearless, not because they are courageous, but because they have no fear. They trust the universe. So when you align yourself with one of them instead of with the frightened part of your personality, guess what? You're aligning yourself with your soul. This happens in ways large as well as in ways that are very, very small. And he gives an example. I just love his examples. He says, when a friend irritates you, it takes courage and a surprising a lot of courage to turn your attention inward and scan your energy centers and what we talked about those yesterday, your throat, your heart, your solar plexus. you're going to scan your energy centers, and you're going to experience the physical sensations in your body. And while you're experiencing the pain of this emotion, not to act or to speak with irritation. See, most people do not use their courage this way. They are controlled by the frightened parts of their personalities. And I would not have understood, much less believed, how much courage it requires to experience the painful sensations of anger or embarrassment or jealousy or resentment without acting on them. It takes more courage to do that than it is required for me to do the things that I felt at the time were admirable and dangerous. Listen, most of the time when we are in an argument, both parties are trying to be right. Both parties are seeking to win. And based on what we've been studying in this book, both parties are seeking to manipulate and to control, which equals and means they are pursuing external power. When one party says, I have no need to be right, let me be quiet. I have no need to win, let me be quiet. I will release my anger at this moment and move into my joy. He says that takes courage. You are stretching beyond your limited perception of who you are. Courage. He says, macho means, I love this, macho means too frightened to consider the possibility of being frightened. Too frightened to consider even the possibility of being frightened. How many of you were macho? If someone had suggested to me that I was a Green Beret because I was frightened, I would have exploded in anger, which equals and means fear, and resentment, which also equals and means fear. I was controlled by external circumstances, and some external circumstances made me feel better, such as when I was admired or successful at a sexual seduction. And some were intensely painful, such as when I felt that I appeared inadequate or ridiculed. I did not have the courage to turn my attention inward and to respond instead of to react. I did not have the courage to ask myself, why is this upsetting me? In short, I had the old courage, but not the new courage. Because the new courage is as important for multisensory humans evolving through spiritual growth as the old courage was for five sensory humans who evolved through survival. But they have different purposes. Five sensory humans use the old courage to overcome fear in order to explore external circumstances and to manipulate them and to control them. But multisensory humans, and that's who you are, multisensory humans, they use this new courage to overcome fear in order to what? To explore internal circumstances and align your personality with your soul. What a beautiful journey. What a beautiful journey. When I saw the word courage, the thing that ran through my mind immediately was from the lion
from The Wizard of Oz and his whole little monologue on courage. I want to play it for you and bring it to remembrance.
What makes a king out of a slave? Courage. What makes the flag on the mast to wave? Courage. What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist or the dusky dusk? What makes the muskrat guard his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder? Courage. What makes the Hottentot so hot? What puts the ape in apricot? What have they got that I ain't got?
Courage. You could say that again.
I love that little piece. I mean, the lyrics are just amazing. And his role was something else, wasn't it? He was the king of the jungle. There was an expectation of him as the lion. He was held in bondage by the expectation of what he should be. And he felt the fact that he could not be what he's supposed to be, this image of what he was supposed to be, that he did not have courage. The wizard told him that you have disorganized thinking, that he was confusing courage with wisdom. How did he get to that point? Disorganized thinking, that he was confusing courage with wisdom. He said the fact that you decide to run when your life was in danger rather than to stand, you considered that to be a lack of courage. But that was wise, actually. And he had the most I'm getting tongue-tied. Where he displayed his most courage was in his ability to share with his friends on the road, on the yellow brick road, the road of intelligence, the road into the inner sanctuary, right? To share with them his deepest fear, his lack of courage. He had intimacy with them. He opened up to them. I think you guys may be surprised to hear this and who wrote this word. He says it's curious what takes courage and what doesn't. When I step on a stage in front of thousands of people, I don't feel that I'm being brave. It can take much more courage to express true feelings to one person. When I think of courage, I think of the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz. He was always running away from danger. He often cried and shook with fear. But he was also sharing his real feelings with those he loved, even though he didn't always like those feelings. And that takes real courage. The courage to be intimate. Expressing your feelings is not the same as falling apart in front of someone else. It's being accepting and true to your heart, whatever it may say. When you have the courage to be intimate, you know who you are, and you're willing to let others see that. Yeah, it's scary because you feel so vulnerable and so open to rejection. But without self-acceptance, the other kind of courage, the kind heroes show in the movies, it seems so hollow. And in spite of the risk, the courage to be honest and intimate, it opens the way to self-discovery. It offers what we all want, the promise of love. That was written by Michael Jackson in Dancing the Dream. Amazing, huh? I'm going to open the lines now for questions or comments. If you have a question or comment this morning, you can press 1 on your telephone keypad. Good morning, Zero. How are you this morning?
Hi, Cynthia.
Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
I tell you, I think I woke up on the call about 10 minutes after, and you were talking about the story, and wow, it's like I was dreaming. I was dreaming. And when I woke up, I heard it was so profound. It almost like it was talking about my own life, facing, you know, our fears and whatever. And it's funny because that's something I've been dealing with. Because, you know, you when you're out in life and you're seeking just to find a significant other or a friend, someone who just see you as you are and love you unconditionally. And folks say that. Folks say that's how they feel because they want that for themselves. But normally we don't give what we want. We say what we want, but then we don't really give it. And that experience with that Linda on the end of the table, I faced that a number of times and was disappointed. But in me, it is to always face my fear because I feel like there's going to be one that is going to respond differently. And I got to have that courage that that will take place. And each one of each person that's on this call now know they have faced that and have failed because we always wonder how the other party is going to feel, whether they're going to see them the same way, whether they're going to like them the same way. And that is the fear all of us have. Because we all want to be accepted for who we are. And I like that. I appreciate this dialogue that you've shared with us, the experience. It is powerful. Thank you so much, Cynthia.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your call. Thank you so much. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to give us a call at 914-338-0590. Press 1 on your telephone keypad. I love to hear from you guys this morning. So, Dr. Reggie, what do you think about courage?
I think it's an awesome statement. I think it is a fact that we have to live in the light of courage. I think that was Anthony that called. Mm-hmm. And I love his statement that we all want to be accepted. And it takes courage and bravery on a personal level, one-on-one. If you want to admit your faults, reveal yourself, who you are. You're unclothing your soul. And that's the best feeling in the world once it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You can face anything. You're not afraid of anything anymore because you face your ultimate truth, yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you face yourself, there's nothing to fear because you're facing the God part of you that is the most ultimate, wonderful, secret, sacred part of reality.
Yes.
And there's nothing to fear, nothing at all. And you face that, you can walk in this world knowing that your contributions have been viable and valuable and that you are a wonderful soul and a sacred one. So we are thankful for the aspect of courage in ourselves. It's a wonderful moment. It really is. And I'm grateful for this lesson and for the people who contributed to Circles of Prosperity because it's a very pioneering effort. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Reggie. All righty. Well, listen, I'm going to go ahead and talk about some of the guidelines because, of course, you know, this is a journey. And we want to learn how to move with courage in healing out the frightened parts of our personality. And the first thing that we have to do is take responsibility for our feelings. We have to take responsibility for our experiences and for our actions. That means we can't blame others for what's going on in our lives. And you know that this is a central theme of authentic power. Everything revolves around you taking responsibility for your experiences. When it comes to taking responsibility for what you experience, you either do or you don't. There is no in-between. That's number one, taking responsibility. Number two, we need to practice integrity at all times. So this often requires action, such as
speaking when frightened parts of my personality don't want to speak, and not speaking when they feel compelled to speak. He's integrity and conscience both present themselves as guides through your life. They are distinctly different guides, and they take you to distinctly different places. Your conscience will take you where your culture is, your parents and your peers want you to go. It also discourages you from visiting places that you have not been approved by, does not meet their approval. And when you ignore your conscience, you feel guilty and you feel remorseful, as though you have betrayed a trust or disappointed an expectation. In fact, your collective expects certain behaviors from you, but it is also more than that. It imposes non-negotiable demands. In other words, what he's telling you, let's say, for instance, that your parents talk to you from the time that you were a kid, wanting you to go to college and become a doctor. That was their vision for you. And you decide to become an actor. But you walk around with all of this guilt because you're not living up to this expectation. So you can't even really enjoy doing that which you really like because you feel so guilty about it. That's what he's referring to. Your conscience is holding you in bondage. And that's a form of fear, is it not? Fear that you're not standing up and representing what your family has dictated to you equals and means success. A lot of us have that problem. I have that problem. He says your conscience tells you when you have ignored a non-negotiable demand, or you are thinking about ignoring one. For example, like don't lie, or here's another one, thou shalt not lie. Even thinking about ignoring such a demand or a command activates your conscience. And you feel guilty at the least, and terrified or a failure or condemned to endless pain. But these experiences of your frightened parts of your personality, that's what these are. So your conscience and fear are the same. Conscience is the painful anticipation of painful punishment. And the demands of every collective, no matter how different in content, are all starkly black and white. It's either this or that. So conscience guides you to the painful fear of pain and the painful need to avoid pain. And that's its entire function. It ensures that you conform to commands decreed by others, or that you suffer punishments decreed by others. He goes on to talk about how this is called internalizing your authority. Because even if the authority is absent, even if it no longer exists, maybe your parents have died, then they were the authority. You are still controlled by that authority. My father's voice still is in my head. If you take care of your car will take care of you. Pay your bills first and everything else you have left over. But at least if you have a dollar left over, at least your bills are paid. Oh, I hear my father in my head all the time. Buy what you need, not what you want. And whenever I disobey any of those commands, the guilt comes and grabs me. The authority takes up residence inside of you as your conscience, and you experience it as fear. I'm going to ask you guys to continue to read Chapter 23, and we'll pick it up and close it out tomorrow. We'll move into chapter 25 on compassion tomorrow. Dr. Reggie, can you take us into our closing prayer? We're going to run a little over.
Father, we thank you for this lesson, and hope that everybody who hears this lesson is blessed and encouraged to take courage and not be afraid to face anything in this life, especially being honest with ourselves and our partners, to always be truthful and to be in integrity. We walk by faith and not by sight. we know that all is well. We believe this is so as we go forward, and so it is.
And so it is. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll be here tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. God bless.